to Fantasy. I am Brandon Hay, and you can find me on Twitter at HayB3.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Zada Kantabedian. You can find me at ZKantsFF on Twitter. Brandon, how are you tonight?
I am great, and we made it. We made it through week one.
Yeah.
Lots of surprises, I think, that we'll kind of discuss first off. And I thought one of the surprises, not necessarily one of the top three surprises, but like the bad teams started out hot and then they had to like hold on. And the Falcons weren't able to. The Texans tied. The Seahawks were able to hold on too. So how did you feel overall about the week one?
It started off kind of like a dud. Like nothing was really happening like during the first half of the games. It didn't feel very electric. I think that's the word I would use is electric. Like it didn't just, I mean, I was very happy to have football back. Don't mistake it. But it just kind of felt flat. It really did. But I think it was more about, it felt like it was more about actual football than fantasy football this past weekend, right? Like, but I mean, as far as like, you know, we were talking about bad teams winning. I mean, we all automatically pivot to the Seahawks game. That game felt like such an upset game. Didn't that feel like an upset game to you? Like, just the way everybody was talking down, like, it felt so much, like, so much groundswell based off of, like, how the Seahawks looked in the preseason, based off of all the hype Russell Wilson was getting and Hackett was getting, and just, it just seemed like such an upset game, and all that was feeding into the motivation for the Seahawks, and you just felt like this. I just felt it like driving home. Like I was like, they're going to play their asses off tonight. They're going to play their ass. If there's one game they win this year, it's going to be this game. They don't give a shit what happens for the rest of the year.
No, I agree. And it kind of reminded me like kind of a college football type atmosphere, you know, about the super underdog, you know, it'd be like Alabama playing like, you know, South Carolina or something. And they end up winning because like they put everything into it. And I guess Seattle is kind of like that atmosphere. There's a couple NFL crowds where it's not really like the NFL. It's kind of like a more of a college type atmosphere, just people going crazy and everything. Whereas I don't think all NFL stadiums are like that.
Yeah, and I think it's also the Denver. I mean, I do think they're a much better team than they actually were. It's just a lot of bad, you know, it's good defensive plays and bad coaching. But also, it's also just another example of what happens when you have a team that doesn't take any live preseason reps, you know, and I understand you want to protect your valuable assets that you invested a lot of money into, but just give them one drive a week. Just give them one drive, give them half a drive, give them something. It's important. That it's very important. And it felt like they just, I know we got to get on with the show, but I just want to talk about like their offensive scheme. It just felt like they had a very like leaky offensive line. It also felt like they had a very conservative game plan as far as like the tight end usage went. Like I didn't anticipate so many tight end packages on the field at once. I thought it was going to be more three wide receiver sets, but we saw a lot of jumbo packages. We saw a lot of like just like two, three tight ends on the field at once for the Broncos. And I'm wondering if we see that going forward. I anticipate we will.
Yeah, that really threw me off, especially because before the game, they were talking about Seattle had a couple corners out. They have, you know, that fifth round pick playing. So I totally thought they would go after early. But you saw they had more success when they started throwing it to the wide receivers later in the game. Well, let's just get into the surprises because that's my first surprise. Yeah. So I was surprised that that Geno played so well for Seattle. I mean, it wasn't like mind-blowing stats. But I thought he looked confident in the pocket. You know, he looked like a very good starting quarterback. And I just didn't think he was going to be able to do that against that Denver defense. And like you said, Russ's stats looked good, but he left a lot on the table. And there were some throws that he made that weren't very good. And I just kind of wonder, is it going to take like Russ, like maybe, you know, a few games till he like gets to where everyone was thinking, like where they're going to have this explosive offense, or the people that say, you know, Russ was, you know, kind of product of that Seattle system and everything. And maybe he's not that top tier quarterback that some people say. I'm not saying which way, you know, I think it's probably somewhere in the middle, but it'll be interesting because if this doesn't work for Denver, they really mortgage their franchise giving up all those players and picks if it's not going to put them over the top.
That thought occurred to me today. You know, I was driving in at work and I was just like, man, was Pete Carroll right this entire time to use the system that they were using in Seattle? Like, I mean, Seattle could have literally gone to more of a passing attack. And we saw Russell Wilson thrive when they needed to win games when they were down. Russell Wilson thrived. But that could have been more of a result that they were losing, not maybe because of the offense, but because maybe the defense wasn't picking up their weight, picking up their slack, the Seattle Seahawks defense. So Russell Wilson would have to come back. And it really got me thinking about maybe Pete Carroll was right about the system being successful. I think run first offenses, especially today in this kind of NFL where we have a lot of lighter, smaller linebackers, are successful. They can be more successful. As boring as it is to watch, they can't be more successful. But yeah, it just definitely got me thinking. And we've never seen, you know, really Russell Wilson in a spread formation offense. I mean, I don't know how he was at Wisconsin. I don't know what kind of offense they ran at Wisconsin, but he went to Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, his last year, he started at NC State. Yeah. I didn't watch him much at NC State and at Wisconsin. I think they ran, I mean, but they still ran the ball a lot at Wisconsin. I don't think it's like a full-on spread, but they probably put him in the shotgun some. But
yeah,
it was definitely interesting. And the usage of Javonte and Gordon, I didn't understand it. At one point, they were showing like Javonte was like averaging like 8 yards a carry in the first half, but he only had like 5 carries. Mm-hmm. So I don't really get that. I mean, I understand splitting up time, but then Javonte got like a lot of targets. And I mean, both of them fumbled at the one, but yeah, it was very interesting. All that, the tight end stuff. I don't know if this is just like a first game coaches thing. And then we haven't even talked about that call to kick that 60 some yard field goal instead of letting Russell with 4th and 5. I couldn't believe that to do that. And then also bleed the clock down that far. So literally like it's the field goal or nothing.
Timeout. You had to burn like 20 seconds. Definitely. Just getting their guys to like they burned 20 seconds, like walking 10 yards up the field and just standing around, not doing anything. Anyways. Okay. So my first surprise was, Damian Pierce getting his milkshake drank by Rex Burkhead. Rex Burkhead drank all his milkshake, man. And you know, who saw it coming? No, I don't think anybody saw it coming, really. All the signs of the preseason told us that Damian Pierce was the guy. Damian Pierce is the better runner. He's the better running back. He's a better pure runner. I think the Texans are cheating themselves out of yards by not having Damian Pierce out there. But, you know, again, fantasy football has to come back down to the practicality of coaches. And each coach is practical in their own way, right? So it's all about football and how assignments are carried out. And Rex Burkhead, he's a 32-year-old running back who's seen enough snaps, who understands the game at a professional level. Maybe they were worried about Damian Pierce because it was his first NFL game against a division rival who's a favorite to win the division. The Colts, I believe, are the favorite to win the division. Put Rex Burkhead out there. Give your team the better chance. Also, Damian Pierce started that game. I don't know if anybody notices it, but Damian Pierce was out there for the first drive. But Rex Burkhead took over in the second quarter, I believe. So there was something that happened, I think, maybe in the game that forced them to put Rex Burkhead out there. Either way, Rex Burkhead as a lead running back is just not sustainable for the entire year. I give it maybe 1 week at the most, maybe two at the most, until we see Damian Pierce back out there as a lead running back. But yeah, that was a crazy surprise to see that.
It's I have to wonder because, you know, even in New England, Rex Burkhead would get, I know he has a unique skill set, but he would get like put in the game for plays that I didn't necessarily think was for his skill set, like as a goal line back or something. And so he must like either do something like during practice or in the off season that coaches love and like are kind of reward him. But yeah, I agree. I did not know that Damian Pierce started the game because I wasn't watching that game early on, but I would have to think that eventually it's going to be – I mean, Pierce will probably get more carries, but it's probably going to be a split for at least the first part of the season until – and it's weird because I could understand if, like, Pierce wasn't a good blocker, but, like, that was one of the big things, like, at the Senior Bowl.
He was picking up his blocking.
Yeah. So it can't be that. So that was a definite surprise for me.
I don't know what happened. Who's your number two? What's your number two surprise?
How bad the Packers looked. I know they did this last year in that first game that had got to move to Jacksonville, but I know they don't have. I know they didn't have Lazard, and you know Devontae's gone. But I just thought it'd be better. And another thing is, I thought they would run the ball more. The only drive they scored on is when they ran the ball. You know, so I thought that was the whole idea. Obviously, that Christian Watson drop was huge early in the game, which I said, you know, before the season, before he got drafted, that's going to be a deal. He's going to have to get over because he had a big drop. Like, he dropped a lot of passes in college. And I saw where, you know, the things Aaron Rodgers wants for those his receivers to do to adjust to the ball, I don't think these rookies are ready for. So I think there has to be a little adjustment on both sides that Rodgers has to understand what they're good at and do a little bit something different. I know Rodgers probably won't, but it's just very interesting. And, you know, with, I think the running backs, especially A.J. Dillon, got, you know, more targets than I thought he would. So I think the running backs are both of them are going to have big years, like you've said. And until, you know, Lazard comes back. And then even when Lazard comes back, I don't think we can expect him to have as many targets as Devontae Adams had. So it'll be interesting how this offense moves forward. I always thought Aaron Rodgers would be fine because I have him, you know, in as my quarterback in some fantasy leagues. And now, you know, I'm a little worried that it, you know, that production might not be there this year.
Yeah. And, you know, I like Alan Lazard at cost at ADP, but you know, everybody's saying, oh, it's because Alan Lazard didn't play in week one. They look so bad. I'm like, are you nuts? Like, he's done nothing. He's done nothing. He's not an alpha wide receiver. He's a good fantasy football wide receiver. Like, he's not going to save the Green Bay Packers offense. If anything, it's going to help Aaron Rodgers probably be a little bit more comfortable because it allows a little bit more chemistry. Maybe they don't become a uber efficient offense, but they can sustain drives for a while and allow them to use the other pieces, right? And plus, you know, Robert Tonyan, he's still working his way back. And I got a thing to say about Robert Tonyan later on in the show. But yeah, like let's relax with the Alan Lazard is going to save the Packers offense, right? He's a fine fantasy football wide receiver, but let's relax with that. And also, like, what is it about Matt LaFleur offenses about them in week one? Like, this is 2 years in a row now where they came out against the Saints at home and got their asses kicked. They went to the Vikings, and I was picking up the Vikings defense everywhere in DFS because I just saw it coming. They were the third cheapest defense on DraftKings, and I picked them up everywhere. But it's like the Packers are all sedated, right? They're all sedated coming into the Viking Stadium. They roll them out there in wheelchairs like this, and then they stand them up and they put uniforms on them and they're sleeping. And then they like flip a switch and they turn on the lights, and like all of a sudden, like Packers, like, oh shit, we're on a football field. Like, they're all like caught off guard. Like, he's getting hit by like three guys at once. Like, I don't understand. Like, did you see that sack where he just got like he got destroyed by three guys? Did you see that sack that where he got like crushed by three guys at once?
Like, another thing is, on the other side, the defense, they were letting Justin Jefferson run wide open.
I was like,
they can't be this schematically, like, you know, genius that the best, arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL is running wide open.
Wide open is like an understatement. Like, even on the pulled out Zoom cam, like, Justin Jefferson's wide open. Like, literally, like, you couldn't even see another receiver. Like, he was playing, there was nobody around for like 20 yards, dude. And he was just, I mean, he couldn't believe it himself. It was insane, man. That was crazy. But I hope they are doing like some serious work this week, because I mean, the Bears, you know, like the Bears are the Bears, but the Bears, like, they look like they were playing with some culture. Like, they had, like, some kind of team culture. Like, they were playing with some unity last week. And, you know, they're a tough team. They toughed it out against Shanahan and his run game in a really sloppy game, dude. And you shouldn't undersell the Bears. So if you give them a chance, don't let them get their foot in the door. And I think, you know, we'll see. And my second one was what you alluded to. My second surprise was Javonte Williams' targets. The guy got, I believe, 11 targets last week. you know, there's nothing really more to say about that, except I, you know, we were expecting Javonte Williams. We were hoping that Javonte Williams would have more of a more carries. And I believe he did, like he had like four more carries or something like that than Melvin Gordon, or five more carries than Melvin Gordon, right? Something like that. Nothing major. It was pretty much still like a pretty paltry split. Nothing like he didn't get like, you know, 12 to 4 ratio in carries. Like he got like, it was just horrible. It was still like minimal carries and they're splitting goal line work. But Javonte Williams, he got bailed out. His fantasy value got bailed out because if this 11 target, it's not going to keep going, but he's obviously the preferred passing down back. So I think you have, you know, a nice RB2 in Javonte Williams. And that's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, definitely. I don't remember in Seattle, Russ throwing to running backs as much as that. I can't really recall. But I don't, you know, so it'll probably go down, but I don't know if that's something what Seattle's defense was necessarily doing. Because another thing, you know, talking about that is, I mean, they obviously know what Russell Wilson likes offensively, you know, being on that team so long. So maybe, you know, they just keyed in on that. But it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. So my last one is, it's Saquon is back. I was picking him up where I could, like, you know, I did a couple startups in the offseason because he was dropping so far. And I was like, I'm willing to take that risk. And I thought that the new offense with Dable was going to highlight what he could do. And, you know, he had those long runs. He looked really good. And I still can't believe the Giants beat the Titans. I thought that was going to be an easy win for the Titans, but the Giants fought back, and maybe just with a new coach, the Giants can kind of, you know, grind out some wins. Daniel Jones still doesn't look very good to me, but I mean, he's going to be serviceable enough for, you know, if they give Saquon the ball enough. And, you know, it looked, Sterling Shepard looked better than I thought he would in the first game of the season. So that was definitely a surprise for me. I thought Saquon would look good, but he looked really good, like back, you know, when he first burst into the scene.
I didn't get a good look at him. I saw just highlights, but I mean, I was definitely on Saquon. It was primarily not because, like, you know, I saw a lot of guys, health professionals who said, you know, you can go back in on Saquon. You know, they were talking about his injury history and stuff like that and said, don't worry about it. But for me, it was more about Brian Daboll and the utilization of running backs, especially in the passing game. And I was just, you know, pounding the table, if you will, for Saquon and his utilization, the prospects of his utilization in fantasy football. And it came to fruition as soon as week one came to a conclusion. So, Saquon, I got Saquon. I had the first pick in a draft in one of my home leagues, in my, like, second home league. I got Jonathan Taylor, and then it came back to me in the second round, and I got Saquon Barkley. So I'm rolling JT and Saquon Barkley.
That's crazy. That's insane. Good value, you know, yeah. Those two first.
And then in my other home league, I had the second pick, and the guy above me took Jonathan Taylor. And I was like, I don't want Christian McCaffrey here. I don't want to deal with this. I understand the upside. I don't want to deal with it. So I just took Cooper Kupp. And in the second round, Saquon came to me again, and Davante Adams was also there. And I was like, well, I'm not going to pass on Davante Adams. I'm just not going to pass on Davante Adams. I'll figure out running back later. And I just took Davante Adams and it paid off. But enough about my fantasy teams. But yeah, I mean, I just love about I'm so happy Saquon's back, and it just makes football all the better. My final one, we'll get it out of the way. My final one is just how discombobulated the Cardinals offense looked. They look completely like they just completely look like they had no idea how to run an offense, or like, obviously they have no defense, but like their offense was just atrocious. Like they could not get a drive going. Like, I don't know what's happening over there. I don't really have anything more to say about it, but what the hell? Like what the actual hell? Like, you guys have been talking about play calling, going to Kyler Murray this off season and him making the calls. But the guy just doesn't seem like a natural leader. Kyler Murray, he doesn't feel like a natural leader. And I don't know what the relationship with Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals organization is, but it feels like there's a bit of a fracture there, and it feels like this relationship is forced. I don't know what's going on. If Kyler Murray is such a great quarterback, then I don't think we should talk about DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, it was because DeAndre Hopkins wasn't there. Like, if he's so good, he shouldn't DeAndre Hopkins, it should be more Kyler Murray than DeAndre Hopkins when it comes to running an offense, right? Like, he still has weapons. He still has weapons. Like, he had James Conner. He had AJ Green. He had Marcus. Like, he still had weapons. Like, he still could get it down the ball, but it just, I can't wait to see what happens in week two. They're going to play the Raiders. Like, you got to do something against the Raiders. Like, they're not the Chiefs. They're not going to put points on you like crazy. And their defense is nowhere near as good as the Chiefs' defense.
Yeah, I saw this going around. I actually saw a clip, someone breaking down one of the plays. But you know that clause in his contract about he has to watch so much like film or whatever. Maybe there's truth to that, because it kind of looks like he just rolls out to the field and just tries to rely on his athletic ability. Because, you know, he tries to run around all the thing. In the play I actually saw, you know, they pointed out everything. And he had no idea that blitzers were coming, like, right at him. But it was obvious, like, pre-play that he, you know, and they were talking about, like, he needs to call this to, you know, have one receiver stay in or something like that. Like, someone, you know, maybe in their third year that they should be doing. So, and I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is the most creative coach to, like, kind of hide those kind of flaws that Murray has. So it is, you know, it will be interesting that, you know, they need to have a good game, because you're right. They have, I mean, honestly, Marquise Brown should be enough for him to have kept that game competitive, and it wasn't. And I hope they throw the ball to Zach Ertz more earlier in the game. Obviously he had some, you know, injuries leading up to it. Maybe that was part of it. But I would think you know, they need to maybe just do a lot of short passing, get the ball out of Kyler's hands fast. You know, I think that's how Dortz really had a lot of receptions in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So that's exciting for when Rondale does come back. Maybe he can get the middle of the field going. But still, yeah, that was a definite concern and very surprising to me. Kyler kind of salvaged it with some real garbage time touchdowns, you know, because he didn't do anything when that game was in doubt.
Yeah, definitely, man. We'll see. It's going to be, I think, you know, week one is where we have our over and under reactions. Week two is where we kind of like, all right, this is what it is then. You know, it's a short season. We got on to week three. This is what you are. We're going to week three. That's just what you are now. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So now we'll move on to backup running backs that we think can contribute this year. I'll go first. Player that I've loved ever since he was drafted, Khalil Herbert. I still think David Montgomery's the lead back there, but it might creep up more to a split, you know, 50-50 split the longer the season goes. Khalil Herbert got the two goal line carries there, and, you know, he scored a touchdown. I think Khalil Herbert could be kind of like the Kareem Hunt to this offense, where you could play him as like a flex week to week, because he's going, if he gets 10 to 12 touches, he could get you enough points for the flex. And then obviously if anything happens to David Montgomery, he moves up a lot, because as a starting running back, we saw him last year, did very well. So he's the first one that I really like. And I actually think him and Justin Fields, you know, complement each other really well. And they seem to work well when they're together in the game. Not to say David Montgomery's not a good player, but I think he's more of a downhill runner, where Herbert's more the slasher.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Yeah, and that's I like that. I like that take of where, you know, Hunt could be, or Khalil Hunt. Khalil Herbert could be like a Kareem Hunt. That's, yeah, I mean, I think the coaching staff seems, you know, I think they did a bad job of managing personnel as far as like offensive line additions went and adding offensive pieces around Justin Fields, but maybe they're confident in the fact that they can create for Justin Fields. Now, Justin Fields still has a problem of holding on the ball for too long. And he still has a problem. He doesn't have a problem of escaping the pocket, though. And they need to do that more. They need to create more design runs for him, because the run defenses are just not going to respect the run game the way it is. Like, they have to put more RPO in there. There wasn't much RPO in there. I watched a lot of that game. I watched more of that game than I did Red Zone, because I wanted to see how Justin Fields and Trey Lance played. Now, Justin Fields I know we're not supposed to be talking about Justin Fields right now, but he had a very difficult first half, but I think he adjusted well during the second half. I'm sorry, I went on a tangent. That game was interesting to me. My first guy, my first running back that can be a contributor is Jerome Ford. I think Jerome Ford, it's interesting. He's the RB3 on the Cleveland Browns, but he's the only RB3 on any team in the NFL who's a handcuff to the two starting running backs. Like, what is that? Like, how is an RB3 a handcuff to either starting running back, right? He's a handcuff to Kareem Hunt, and he's a handcuff to Nick Chubb because they utilize two running backs in that backfield, right? I think he's more of a backfield. He's more of a, he's more, he complements Hunt handcuff better. But you know, if Chubb goes down, like, they're not going to give everything to Hunt. Like, Jerome Ford is going to be a part of that offense. Jerome Ford, you know, like you alluded to earlier, can provide flex value on his own. And, you know, for that reason alone, I think he's worth a stash. I picked him up in Scott Fishbowl today because I think he's a worthwhile stash. It's a long season. We've seen both running backs go down with injuries year after year. So, you know, they miss multiple weeks. And I think Jerome Ford could be a valuable piece running back in an offense that utilizes two running backs efficiently behind one of the best running backs, behind one of the best offensive lines in the game.
This is why we're together, because I love Jerome Ford. You know, before the draft, I was a little upset that he went so late. But, you know, at first glance, you think the Browns wasn't a good spot for him. But to me, you know, he outplayed Jonas Johnson and kind of, you know, Kareem Hunt probably moves on after next year. And same with Jonas Johnson. And they in the preseason, they threw a lot of passes to him. So I think that's a great take. And someone that if you have the place to stash, because it, like you said, it's a long season. And if that first game was any indication, they're going to run the ball a lot. You know, I think they would probably like to run the ball even more than they did that first game. And they had over 200 yards rushing. So my second backup running back is Rashad White, the running back out of Arizona State. He didn't have mind-popping numbers that first week, but you saw a little bit of his slashing ability. And they, you know, they kind of said it in the broadcast. He could be that James White for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we know with Leonard Fournette's injury history, he pulled up a little lame at the end of that game. You know, he might have a couple games where he's a starter, and obviously he could be like a top 12 fantasy option those weeks. And then, you know, if he gets, you know, 8 to 12 touches, kind of like Khalil Herbert, you know, in that offense, I like that. And if you're in a pinch, you can play him at flex. And so so I really like how he could contribute this year and then, you know, possibly in the future in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I think people forgot about Rashad White as the year opened. And I think, you know, seeing him on the field last Sunday started to like, oh yeah, Rashad White, he's a pretty good bench. You know, and there my next guy is Eno Benjamin, but I should have put Kenneth Walker on here. Kenneth Walker on here because he's ready. But anyways, we'll stick with my guy, Eno Benjamin. There's a lot of guys, man. There's a lot of guys. Cam Akers, good backup running back that can make. I'm just kidding.
Eno Benjamin. You're gonna trigger all these people. I actually did start Cam Akers in a league.
Yeah.
And I lost by 0.6. So if I started like, I have Daryl Henderson on that team too.
Terrible.
And like all indications were that he was going to at least get 50-50, you know, it was going to at least get 50-50. And then all hell broke loose.
For what it's worth, man, like people have been like harping on Cam Akers this entire time. Look, I don't think Cam Akers was – I think Cam Akers – I can't make an honest assessment. I don't know what to think. I can't think anything about it because I don't know how he looked. He got three carries behind an offensive line that was getting the crap kicked out of him by one of the best defensive lines in the game. And this offensive line is below average. And Darrell Henderson could barely get any yardage on runs except on toss plays where they created space for him. So it's really hard for me to tell if Cam Akers' Achilles is affecting him or not. Right. So we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, my last guy, Eno Benjamin, finally his time has come. I think James Conner is up there in age. You know, he's finally up there in age. He looked pretty sluggish last week. This Cardinals offense has a history of using two capable running backs. Now, Eno Benjamin came in during garbage time last week, but he performed really well. He ran really hard, and he's a very good receiver, right? So I think Eno Benjamin is a fine stash. for nearly 10, 12, whatever formats you have. I think he's a fine stash where you can fit him, because his name is going to be popping up on waiver wire shows sometime this season, and he's going to produce low RB1 numbers and high RB2 numbers. So Eno Benjamin is going to be a contributor later on this year at some time.
I love it because I've been waiting for Eno. I bet I have some dynasty
leagues. Y'all have.
I'm like, I don't want to give up yet. I don't want to give up yet because I was like, I feel like, you know, he could be a good second back, and finally his time has come. So I love both of your picks. So so next is the thin slicing segment that we started last week. You're better explaining it. You just want to do a quick explanation on it.
So thin slicing, I won't give the scholarly definitions. Thin slicing is basically like, you know, when you walk into a room and you see something happen really quickly and you get a gut intuition about something, and that gut intuition usually turns out to be right. Well, thin slicing is exactly that. Thin slicing is where you see something for a narrow window and you get a very, you have a very good idea about what is going to happen. You make a very accurate assumption based off of what's going to happen, right? So thin slicing is basically that in fantasy football terms, right? We're looking at things that we saw in narrow windows, small sample sizes, and projecting it out, and you know, we're gonna make hopefully accurate assumptions on it. And I'll just go with mine first. Mine is that I believe Robert Tonyan is in line for a very big year, right? No, I understand he's coming off his ACL tear, right? But he didn't start the season off PUP. And last week he played 36% of the snaps against the Minnesota Vikings. My belief is that the Packers are easing him back in. I think this week we're gonna see those snaps at least double to 60%. Right. And on Robert Tonyan snaps, he received 5 targets on 36% of the snaps. That's more targets than so many wide tight ends that you're going to be running to the waiver wire for to stream. Right. So Tonyan received 5 targets on 36% of the snaps. He was targeted on 28% of his routes run. Now, for reference, Travis Kelce gets 29 to 28% targets on his routes run. I'm not saying that Robert Tonyan is Travis Kelce, because I know that's what you're thinking. No, Robert Tonyan is in an offense where he's one of the only reliable assets and receiving weapons for one of the best quarterbacks in the league, right? So I feel good about, based off this thin slice that I had, that Robert Tonyan is going to see many targets this year. He's going to see many targets this year. He's going to be somewhere in 25 to 26% targets per route run. He's going to have a breakout year, and we're going to be, whoever has him is not going to have to run to the waiver wire to stream tight ends anymore. So if you have room for Robert tight end on your waiver wire, on your team, please stash him, because I think this time next week, you're going to be wishing you did. I guarantee it.
I definitely like that. So mine is, well, it has to do with Curtis Samuel, but it kind of ties into the whole Washington Commanders offense. I watched this whole game. You know, they played the Jaguars, home team. So I thought Terry McLaurin would go off. He had that one long touchdown pass, but he didn't get a lot of targets, and it's not like the Jags have lockdown corners. I didn't necessarily see them doubling him. So that part, it's just 1 week, but it worries me a little bit about Terry. And then, because I was big on Curtis Samuel when they signed him last year, but he was kind of an afterthought for me, when they drafted Jahan Dotson. But he got 11 targets, got 4 runs. He was heavily involved. And I think this affects, J.D. McKissic too, because they're kind of using him in that same type of role that they would use with McKissic, a lot of short passes, getting him out in space. So whereas before, I thought McKissic was fine, you know, you could pretty much set him in your flats and be good, you know, every week. I don't necessarily know if you can do that now. We'll see if Curtis Samuel continues to get that. But it seemed like to get the offense going, especially early in the game, they targeted him often, gave him runs and everything. So it'll be interesting whenever, if Brian Robinson comes back, if that changes. But that was the biggest thing for me, that the Commanders offense is going to be totally different, at least from week one, from everything I thought it would be before the season.
Yeah, and I think this also, like, we're going to see, like what I said before, like week one, we saw a lot of things. We overreacted and underreacted. And I think week two, we're going to start to settle into those reactions that we had, or adjust up those reactions that we had. And I think, you know, the Washington offense as a whole is where we're going to settle in. Week two against the Lions, you know, they're not a formidable team. But I mean, as far as like, I think it really all falls on Carson Wentz and how he performs, you know, as far as a quarterback and if he's consistent or not, because he's still shaking my eyes, right? And I've always said that Carson Wentz, he's a high-end backup quarterback. That's what I believe he's at right now. Now, he didn't perform like one last week. He performed really well. The weapons that they have on that team should not give Carson Wentz a reason to fail, right? They're putting everything around him. They're drawing everything up. So Carson Wentz, you know, as long as he can operate functionally as a quarterback, don't make any stupid mistakes. They're putting Curtis Samuel back there is probably one of the biggest reasons why that offense is finding success right now, because he just offers so much more. He opens up the playbook so much more with what they can do with him. So yeah. I agree with you on that take on the Washington football take.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I heard someone talk about this. It was truly Carson Wentz like career in one game. He was perfect in the first half, and then he threw two interceptions and, you know, let the Jags back in the game, and then had to throw two like touchdowns to Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin to actually win the game. It's kind of like, you know, Wentz looks really good sometimes, but sometimes he has to look really good because he puts himself in these situations where, you know, he's losing. It's kind of like, you know, the quarterback that, you know, has all these comeback wins, but he has these comeback wins because he throws like a pick six every first half. You know, he has to come back. So it's kind of like he puts him in this, you know, it would be a lot easier for him if he didn't make these dumb decisions, which the two interceptions were really bad, very bad. But yeah, it'll be interesting how Washington kind of moves forward. So next, we're going to talk about players to hold and not, you know, overreact and trade away yet. And I'll start with my first one, person we talked about, Damian Pierce. With rookies, especially running backs, I think you always got to be a little hesitant on how their usage is going to be early on, because coaches get really scared, you know, about those rookies and fumbling and pass protection and all those type of things. And I think Pierce, what, you know, later in the season, he could help you win your league, because I think once he starts getting the bulk of the carries, he could really do well even on a bad Houston Texans team.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you with Pierce, and I spoke about it earlier. I think the favor is going to sway back in this way. You just can't do 18 weeks of Rex Burkhead or 17 weeks. It's just not viable. Like, you can't do 17 weeks of a 50-50% split with Rex Burkhead. You can't give that guy that many runs. Like, first of all, he's not sustainable. Second of all, he's got shitty footwork. Like, he's got really bad footwork for a running back. Like, the guy is like sloppy as hell. Damian Pierce is clean. He's decisive. He's just, you're just leaving so many yards on the field when you don't give Damian Pierce the keys to the car. So I'm totally on board with you. My first guy is Kadarius Toney. Like, and I don't know what Brian Daboll plans to do with him, but I saw a question on Twitter on a different show today that said, would you drop Kadarius Toney or Chris Olave? And I said, look, you can find 36 different Chris Olaves on the waiver wire right now. Right. And what I mean by that is guys who are going to get wide receiver threes on their team, who are going to get four targets, five targets a game, maybe. Right. Chris Olave is a wide receiver three, I believe, behind Jarvis Landry and Michael Thomas. Right now, Chris Olave is going to have good games. Chris Olave is a good wide receiver. But Kadarius Toney is such a dynamic receiver. Kadarius Toney, his ceiling is insane. His ceiling is a PPR wide receiver one. That guy would get peppered with targets. Let's see how long the Giants can go with Kenny Galladay and Sterling Shepard, who's always injured, and Kenny Galladay, who can't move right, and whoever else they got. I can't remember the names, which is like brings me to my point. Like, they can't sustain this all year, so they're going to have to turn to Kadarius Toney, whether they like it or not. Like, they're going to have to go to him. You can't play in that division or in the league and not utilize a player like that. You just can't. It's just it's negligible. Like, Brian Daboll, I respect you as a head coach, but pretty soon, you think teams are just going to – what? You think teams are not going to just stack the box against Saquon Barkley? You think he's going to break off a 60-yard run every game? Just not going to happen. It's not realistic. It's going to have to come down to Kadarius Toney sometime. Hold Kadarius Toney. He was dropped in my league. I'm going to pick him up.
Yeah, it's – I don't understand. I didn't understand it at all, but I believe in like the fourth quarter, they had a run for him too, and he had like a pretty good play. So it's not like they just didn't want to, you know, they did use him, but not nearly enough. And you know, the difference between Olave and Tony is Olave, they have Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry ahead of him. But with Tony, they have Sterling Shepard and Galladay. I mean, he's better. I would take Tony. I mean, he's younger. He's more athletic. He has more explosive. So, I mean, they got the win. And I saw some, like, quotes from Daboll. You know, he didn't really say anything that, you know, he knows the playbook and, you know, it'll be a different game plan week to week. I still would think your game plan would involve, like, one of your best receivers. Yeah. I mean, but anyway, so my second one is Adam Thielen for the Vikings. He only had 4 targets, 3 catches for, I think, about, like, 36 yards. We talked about earlier how the Green Bay Packers were letting Jefferson just wide open. No one was around him. So Thielen wasn't really needed, but I think he's going to be way more involved in other games when Justin Jefferson isn't just running wide open. And once they got up big on the Packers, I think they kind, you know, they kind of rolled it in, you know, because they knew the Packers couldn't come back, started running the ball more, not necessarily taking those deep shots. But I think Thielen is actually in for a big year, even with that lackluster first game. But I think he's going to definitely be more involved in that offense. You see, they want to throw the ball. And with that scheming, I think he'll do really well, because if teams start doubling Jefferson, then obviously he'll get single coverage, you know, because there's still KJ Osborne on the field too. So I really like Adam Thielen the rest of the way. I think you should hold him. And also, if you can, you could probably get him pretty cheap from someone that thinks that everything's going to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. After last week's game, you could trade so much. You could trade whatever you want for Adam Thielen. Yeah. And he's going to get his, like, he's still Adam Thielen. Like, that offense utilizes a wide receiver too. Like, he's going to be solid. He's going to be a solid wide receiver too in fantasy. That's what I think he'll be. And my second guy is James Cook. You got a rookie running back who was drafted with high draft capital. When a team drafts a player like that, they have a vision for him, right? They have something they want to do with him. They want to utilize him a certain way. They see something about him, right? So you got a rookie running back who's making his debut on premier television against the Super Bowl champs, and he fumbled on his first carry, right? They benched him for a little bit. It's not because they don't like him, but they want to make sure they win this. The Bills want this to be a statement game. The entire team was playing very disciplined, right? And they said, look, James Cook, we understand you're a very talented running back, but right now we're just going to button this thing up. We're going to get out of here. We're going to go back to Buffalo. We're going to give you some more time in the practice field, and we're going to get you involved later. James Cook is going to be involved in that offense. He is going to be involved in that offense. Now, to what degree? I'm not saying that he's going to be a league winner, but he's going to be definitely a fantasy football league contributor. Definitely. I think he'll have returned solid wide running back 2 weeks. And I think they're going to start utilizing me in the passing game. You saw Devin Singletary get receptions. That's fine. You know, again, Devin Singletary, he's an experienced veteran, and they wanted to get out of there, beat the crap out of the Super Bowl champs, and that's what they did. So James Cook, I think those targets will start to defer back to James Cook, and you will see him start. I think we'll see him supplant Zach Moss as that RB2 on the team.
No, I totally agree. And I was talking to someone about this, and people that thought, I mean, I thought James Cook would be more involved. Obviously, the fumble didn't help his case, but I never thought – there were certain people that thought automatically he was taking everything from Singletary, and he's just not that type of back that can sustain that.
No, that's not realistic at all. No.
No, but I think he will take, you know, whatever targets and runs that Zach Moss got, you know, in that game. And he's like one of those bats, kind of like what I was saying with Herbert. If you give him like 10 to 13 touches, which I probably around that what they want to give him, I like that in a flex play because he's so explosive, and you know, you get 3 or 4 receptions already, you know, you're close to 10 points, and that's kind of the floor you would like for a flex spot. And he could have big weeks where he has long touchdowns with Josh Allen. So I really like that take, and it's kind of the thing with these rookies, they're not all going to come out and explode like Justin Jefferson, you know, and players like that. I think those type of players really make it unfair expectations for the rest of rookie classes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now we'll end the show on 2 games we're excited to watch this week. First one for me is the Philadelphia-Minnesota game on Monday night, I believe. So both of these offenses look very good in week one. There's so many fantasy options on both teams. Watch, it's going to be like a 6-3 game. But but I'm excited for that game. I want to see the fireworks go back and forth, see how each team does. Philly got up big on the Lions and almost let them come back. But, I want to see that, because I didn't get to watch that game very much. I want to see if Miles Sanders continues to get, a lot of those, the work, even though each running back got a touchdown, which I think is going to happen because they seem to like to, bring in different running backs and everything. But, I just want to see that offensive explosion on Monday night.
I want to see more Kenneth Gainwell utilization, man. Like,
I agree. I agree. It's better. It's getting better, but not.
It's getting better. You saw them. There were a couple. I think there were like one or two plays drawn up for him, like one screen pass that got broken up and something else. But it's gonna be a hell of it. It's gonna be one of the best primetime games of the year. I think it's gonna be insane based off of like how these two teams close out their week ones. My first game is going to – it's not a high-scoring game. It's the Niners-Seahawks. I want to see how the Niners actually look when they're not in a torrential downpour. I want to see how Trey Lance operates as a quarterback. I want to see his processing. I want to see how he works, his reads. I want to see how fast he is off the ball. I just want to see Trey Lance in a neutral environment, right? And, again, I want to see the Seahawks play, another divisional opponent. Geno Smith last week looked very poised, made very good decisions. Through very good off platform, through very good pressure in his face. He looked very confident. Like, he's not effing around. Like, I want to see if that persists. Like, is Geno Smith? No. Am I going to say it? Is he going to be the franchise quarterback for the Seahawks? Like, is week two going to be like kick the tires and light the fires on Geno Smith? I'm here for it, dude. I'm here for it. He's nearly 10 years after he was drafted. He looks like he's finally like a legit quarterback. These NFC West teams, they play dirty against each other. They hate each other. They just want to spoil it, doesn't matter what it is, but they just want to spoil the season for each other. So I want to watch that game. I want to see what Deebo Samuel does. I want to see if he's used as a running back as much. I want to see if Brandon Ayuk can get going. It's going to be a good game. Just good gritty NFC West game.
Definitely. And let me ask you this. Say the Niners lose this game. Do they play Jimmy? How quickly do they switch to Jimmy G?
Well, it depends. I think if they lose this game, it's not just going to be as black and white as a loss. I think it really depends on a lot of variables. Like, was it on Trey Lance, really? Was it on, like, the defense? Was it a special teams fumble? And, it's going to probably just come down to Trey Lance, because that's the way that mainstream media just works, because they need to, pump the ratings. But, I think Trey Lance understands what's at stake, and it's really all about how he handles pressure. And, I think the team right now has his back, but one more loss and even a few players in the locker room talking about Jimmy G and how they would prefer Jimmy G is enough to just completely derail the season and the entire culture of that team. So Trey Lance has to put something on paper. He has to put some drives together on paper. He has to put some scoring drives, whether it's field goal or touchdown. He needs to do something inspiring for that team so they can see him as a leader, because he didn't do that last week. I don't believe he did it last week. He needs to come out there and make some plays and show them that he can be their leader. And if he can at least show them he can be a leader, right, and make some gutsy plays and still lose, I think he buys himself some more time. So it depends.
Yeah, I know most people aren't doing this, and they're talking about how bad he was. That weather in that game, I don't think you can like judge anything on it, because it was so sloppy and everything like that. I think you are right. I think they have to give him some time. I don't think you can yank him early. I mean, if you're going to make this move, I think you got to give him, probably at least like 5-6 games, and that he would really have to like shit the bed for me to, them be 0-6, and have like
Yeah.
Two touchdowns, six picks. Yeah.
0-6 would be insane. Like, I don't even think they could go in six. Like, they got to win this game. They're at home. Like, you got to win this game. But, I mean, the Seahawks are going to put up a fight. But Trey Lance, like, he just don't be horrible. Just don't be a horrible. Like, just be competitive. That's it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. So my second game is, we kind of discussed these teams, the Cardinals and Raiders. Both teams were underperformed last week. Both defenses looked horrible against the Chiefs and the Chargers. Good offenses. But, you know, Derek Carr, who I've been big on in the offseason, he looked bad. I would hope, you know, it gets better. I know the Chargers have pretty good defense. But some of his passes, the passes he got picked off on were bad. I want to see if Kyler Murray can – I mean, the Raiders' defense didn't look very good against the Chargers, so he should be able to score some points. I think this could be a sneaky high-scoring game too.
I think it's the high-scoring game of the week.
Oh, really?
I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very interested. And there's a lot of fantasy players in this game too. So
yeah, and a lot of fantasy players on the Raiders who are not going to get any targets because Davante Adams is going to get all the targets.
Yeah.
My last game is going to be the Saints-Bucks, primarily because this is my upset of the week. I think the Saints are going to upset the Bucks at home. Jameis Winston and that New Orleans team, they're grooving, man. They're grooving. They're feeling themselves. They really are. Like, Michael Thomas and Jameis Winston are hanging out post-game, doing the presser. Like, just the team's looking great. Like, what run game? We don't even need a run game. Kamara, like, who? Ingram, what? Like, they brought in Latavius Murray. Fuck it. Bring Latavius Murray. Who cares? We don't even need a running back. Like, Jameis Winston's out there throwing it all over the yard. Like, they're gonna get after it this week. I think they're going to embarrass the Bucs. I think they're going to make a statement game this week, and I think they're going to put Tom Brady played last week. Like, Tom Brady played the Cowboys, and they really didn't play all that great against the Cowboys. They could barely put any touchdown scoring drives together. They just played a team that was disheveled, I think, you know, and it's going to be a – I think this is going to be a true test. I think this is, you know, another divisional game. The Saints have momentum going into week two, and they probably see Tom Brady and the Bucs offense. It just feels like the Bucs offense doesn't feel like the Bucs offense of the past 2 years. The Bucs offense just seems different. It just doesn't feel scary anymore. Like, I'm not underestimating Tom Brady, but the team doesn't feel the same anymore. Like, it just feels like, I mean, plus all the wide receivers are hurting. And I picked them to be upsets before. Like, Mike Evans ended up on the injury report with a calf thing. And Godwin's obviously injured. But then, like, you know, Gage is hurting. And now Julio Jones is missing time. So, like, I don't – yeah, I want to see Jameis Winston succeed. I like seeing these quarterbacks who've had it rough the first few years finally be able to establish themselves, mature, and grow into the passers that they're meant to be. You know, Geno Smith, Jameis Winston, I want to see these guys. It makes me happy. It makes the game better. And when you see, you know, and who doesn't love an underdog? You know, I think underdogs speak a lot to, like, society. Like, a lot of us are middle-class people, right? And a lot of us view ourselves as underdogs in society. And we all want to see the underdog, you know, come out on top. And, you know, it's a good narrative for us to follow because it speaks to us. So, yeah, I want to see Jameis Winston beat the crap out of the Bucks.
Well, I didn't realize you were such a Jameis Winston fan. Are you the leader of the fan club?
No, not even. I'm a Geno Smith fan now. Like, I didn't know.
I agree. I get it. I meant to say this when we're talking about Geno Smith. Is he going to be the modern day, like, Rich Gannon that, like, was, like, you know, nothing, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you know, comes onto the scene? But yeah, you definitely depressed me a little bit because I didn't know about all those injuries to the other Bucs receivers. But you are right about the Saints. They always, even when the Bucs, you know, were playing great offensively, the Saints have always played, since Tom Brady's been there, played them tough. You know, even if Mike Evans was healthy, Marshon Lattimore usually shuts him down pretty well.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all those, I would imagine the Bucs are going to be run heavy if all those injuries with Fournette and everything like that. But this definitely could be where the Saints get a win. And, you know, your boy Jameis can show out against the Bucs.
Absolutely. I can't wait to watch it.
All right. So that is it for this week. Just want a little reminder to like the video and subscribe on YouTube. We put up some of those film cuts. We're going to put up more. And also moving forward, we're going to have a short segment where I talk about some college players that the NFL fans, that don't watch that much college should kind of look out for the next season. So until next week, we'll see you then.
See you guys. Good luck.